Hello, good evening. Welcome to the Odile Show. Tonight, today, February 2nd or 3rd, 2019, this show has changed. As anyone, if anyone, pays attention to the frequency with which it updates, this ends up being late, you know, in recent times, like, which ends up being more than half of its life. Like a personal blog, more so than a regularly updated political dialogue or interview show. Finding, and I've mentioned this before, finding serious guests is a little difficult, reason being not least of which that I maybe was a little lazy about looking for them. Not that I was cherry-picking, I want good content, and like serious politicos, living artists, you know, usually kind of, not always, but I mean, some of them understand the need for communication and this sort of press. Often though, just involved in doing their work, you know, too much so to come on the show, or that, or they're middling. That's not to say I haven't had heavy hitters, because I have. Early on, when I was living up in the valley in the Phoenix metro, I was just encountering people working for that magazine who were, yeah, they were amazing people. Just day here and there, like I would find one and I could just decide, and I could pass one up even if I thought they'd be a good interview, because there was some dependable frequency with which I could get people on the show, because I would just encounter them doing stories and going about. Since I left, and they were all great early on, and that was early on, and that those shows were interviews, and since then they've all been monologues. And I'm proud of all those people, and they were great. But anyway, since I left the greater Phoenix metro some four or five years ago and relocated to a more rural Arizona region, by the luck of the draw, which is good for a number of reasons. I mean, this is good for my domestic situation in certain ways. My family situation. I don't have like an urbane or, you know, prolific, you know, kind of metro art, you know, thriving art or music scene, or the academic infrastructure to plumb, you know, like what's going on up in the valley, or, you know, another major seat of learning, or a capital city that's, you know, politically. So I just have, I was just rolling my own political writing and my own art for show content of, you know, which is what I was doing. So there was that, and it sufficed. I mean, it filled up shows and it's fine. I mean, this show isn't obviously my main job. These days, it's more like a blog because it's more of a catch-all and less narrowly tailored, if you will, respecting what the cut line at the top of the WordPress page says. So then a few years back down here, and I went back to school for a math degree, for which the homework has been substantially time-consuming, and I've neglected this show except for the various uploads of me at local open mic performances over the past year, for example, which I was compelled to begin doing in late 2017, in large part by the sheer cabin fever that comes from sitting around doing months and months and months of calculus homework. Some guy in his early 40s, such as myself, you know, just sitting, you know, it's a post-baccalaureate and the like. I live down, I'm like a half hour north of Mexico. 1.5 hour north of the Naco port of entry, a relatively rural community. And I've lived out here before. When I got out of college, I was put on a newspaper out here, and I was as an ambulance chaser and a government reporter. And I was here for 4 years. So I've been here before. That's part of why I was able, had a link to get, ended up back down here again. In 2014. So, anyway, and I'm just kicking around. And so I, you know, looking at graduate schools, and there was money involved that I didn't have, and there was domestic infrastructure, which I don't have in my household. So I just thought, well, I'll just go take a post back in math. I think I've said this before, and I'll say I've said this before during the show a bunch. I come on about once a year and explain why I haven't updated in a year. And they, over the past 2 or 3 years, the answer, the reason's been effectively the same. But so that's why I ended up as like a polemicist back taking a math degree. Sheer academics of it. You know, as I said in a bit at a stand-up open mic last month, or it was four weeks ago, you know, I don't want to do a bunch of hard work for someone else, you know, relatively meaningless, and they keep most of the money, so why not at least, you know, at least an academic pursuit? You end up with maybe a heightened credential or greater knowledge, and you're not slaving away for someone else under a skewed economic scenario. And I'm a singer. I was a chorister in the old days, the more recent old days. And that was basically what I had to do for, like, one of the only ways I could do, like, honest work for a long time when my kid was younger. And I needed some sort of creative outlet besides my own, you know, writing as an author, or my own cubicle job at the time or whatever. I'm not much of a guitar player. I'm a sax player. I'm a singer. I'm self-taught on a steel string guitar and useful enough to accompany, you know, my own vocals with some picking and strumming. And so regarding the open mic little career, on the road career I had as a, you know, playing these venues in the, over the past year and change. I was traveling a half hour each week down to Old Bisbee, south of here, for a variety show at the Copper Queen Hotel Lounge, often hosted by some acquaintances of mine. They're brothers, and they have a great bit, and they play a lot in the round, in area venues. Spread out circuit, and there are little tourist traps everywhere around here. And there's kind of an urban hub, but it's not a big city. And it's not a college town, but so you know, that sort of thing, and all of that entails. But there are restaurants and bars and venues and live music, and there's for communities of these sizes, there is a fairly alive music scene. It's not anything that compares to, you know, what you might find in a bigger city. But anyway, it's not bad. It became obvious that down at OB, at least I needed to be writing my own songs if I wanted to fit in with that crowd or compete, as it were, it's just the nature of that beast. A lot of musicians down there, you know, and they're not necessarily like working musicians, but they're artsy types, and they have songs, and they have, so when you're playing around for, when their audience expects, that's what they expect of someone playing a song. Well, they want them to say, here's a song I wrote, and here's why, and they want to like the song, you know, they don't want to hear covers. I mean, you can do that, depends on the venue anyway. We'll talk about that in a minute. So anyway, I began doing, to the extent that I cut an EP demo, four songs out of like some dozen, which I wrote and performed, you know, in the past season, you know, that I took the time to record. Anyway, those songs come easier than books. And I can commit them to memory faster because I don't have to remember somebody else's lyrics and why they wrote them. Like, you know, the little trigger mechanisms for memorization or whatever. If you don't already know the song, anyway. So you can get a song into production basically faster than you can, like your own song, faster expeditiously than you can a cover, depending on if you already know the cover. I mean, okay, so anyway, now that's when one's songwriting skills really get tested. Like, you can write songs, you can 23 skidoo songs. If you have a poor technician musically, that's a problem. And that's, to some notable extent, a problem for me. I don't know. I mean, I can, I'm self-taught on guitar. I can, you know, I can speed pick fast, you know, and I can play quite a bit. What am I? It's been nearly 20 years I've been playing. Self-taught. And it's like, it's slow going. And like, I'm not, unfortunately, you know, I can't beautifully play a nylon string classical guitar, which would have far more marketability, I think, or at least, you know, impress more people. I mean, I'm just, yeah, but it's unique and I can play the blues and whatever and sing it. And I'm nice and loud and heartfelt. And these songs, the lyrics kind of are no problem, if you might. And they are, I'm liking them. You know, they're depthful and I'm satisfied with that. The guitar playing is somewhat limited, but that's, you know, when I get up on a mic, I mean, the song lyrics and what I say before and after the song, and as long as I'm not out of tune, that's more or less the prescription for the style of music that I'm doing. Anyway, there was an open stage which I regularly attended up here in this town where I live, or just immediately up the road. It was a monthly, and for it and that crowd, I found that covers were better received. It's a completely different crowd, as you know, as a bigger. Anyway, as you can imagine, one's the other. But I have this observation to make. I have again grown tired of hanging out in bars and haven't been playing these venues lately. I've just kind of quit. That's not to say that I still can't come up with albums. I probably ought to still continue to, you know what I mean? That's something. As a content creator that I have found I have a line on. And it's difficult to do those when you're not rolling and regularly performing. Like, it makes it easier when you're rolling and regularly performing, even if it is just open mics and stuff. But I used to work in bars and restaurants when I was sick of it. By the time I was done with it, when I got my first straight job as a writer, if that can be said, I don't think you can have a straight job as a writer, an actual writer. But I mean, I was, you know, working hourly as a reporter. And a beat writer, you know, and so that's, but when I did that, you've heard me say this before, I was impressed by, like, because for all, whatever, almost 12 years of my original overall undergrad career, I was working in kitchens, and, like, I stunk like a kitchen, and I stunk like washed, you know, like dishwashing, and bars, and cigarette smoke, and I was so sick of it. By the time I got a job at the school, I would have rather been in prison. I hated it. Sick of it. And going back recently, you know, then came change of life, addition to the family, you know, comeuppances, and you know responsibilities, and college is over and it's been over, and then going, you know, so my perspectives have changed, my lifestyle has changed, and I'm steadier far, you know, that's the whole point of, you know, you got to be that as much as you can, that stone for the family and for yourself. Because, you know, when you're, whatever, when you're 43, there's not, no one's going to do it for you. Going back now to those venues and looking at the what's going on in there and the crowds and the scenes and taking it all in, it was different to be in that environment as a sober, consenting adult, you know. However, the general nature and ambiance of bars and taverns and public houses and clubs, I can report to you, has not changed along with my perspective over the intervening years. There's no surprise there. I mean, maybe there is a surprise there. I don't know. It depends on. It's all a matter of perspective, and it's all a matter of how you look at it. The troubles of solipsism and the evident fruitlessness of trying to do the best you can for the world around you is not the same as actual fruitlessness as trying, although it can be pretty disheartening. I don't know. Anyway, then you're dealing with, on the other hand, you got the tyranny of the majority, and you can only, it's a weakest link scenario, and you can only go as fast as the slowest car and that sort of thing. So I don't know, you know, you just got to take it up on faith and logical deduction that things have gotten better. Anyway, that was a rant, sorry. But there is fun to be had in these, you know, in these, on these scenes, and there is, you know, and there is, but there's so much compromise to be suffered in the social commons, and it's not just, you know, public houses. It's not, you know, I see it up at the, on campus among the youth or the co-eds, the young adults of today. And everybody's different, and I hate to, you know, in some ways, those old standby social constructs I look at from a different perspective at the campus these days, but I know enough and remember enough historically to know that it's the same thing I'm looking at, just from have changed. Somebody's partying, you know, out in these venues, and there are definitely winners and losers out there, and, you know, and you see that. That transcends whether you're in a bar or whether you're in class. And then there's the likes of yours truly, and it seems like sometimes I may feel like I'm something to everybody, where I would, you know, kind of prefer to be, turn the page, certain circumstances where I would, like in pubs, for example, I would prefer to be more of a nobody. And then there's the question of maybe I'm, if I'm a writer, that's what I've chiseled in stone the deepest in terms of my activities and the trouble I've gone through to train over the years to do it professionally or competently or and leave a mark or responsibly, literarily and journalistically and sociologically and historically. Like, I don't know, that's a lot of training for a relatively small amount of etching. And it seems like people think that, well, you're a layabout, you're a writer. And there is that reputation. But, I mean, your writers, they're philosophical people. And they, like I said earlier, they're like, oh, I'm going to go work really hard for someone else so they can keep most of the money. You know, and you just wear me out like some old gourd with the seeds rattling around in it. Like, no, that's foolish. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, but most people don't see that. And in journalism school, you know, it teaches to follow the money. And I've said, talked about this before. And it's like, I have difficulty after working kind of as just a member of the press corps over the years. Like, you know, I don't have any real wealth, like capital wealth, you know, like paper, you know, I don't have any, cabbage, you know, around laying around. I mean, there's nothing really extra. I mean, I've kind of always managed to be comfortable, but it's always kind of string to string. And, you know, that, like, I've had trouble differentiating. I mean, it's a forensic tool before it's something. I mean, yes, it's a forensic tool for me. It's also what I, you know, buy food with, keep the lights on with. But I've always had a certain disdain for it, and I've always not let it wag the dog. Now it's paramount in my mind because I've got additional schooling. I've had to retool, you know, rewrite the resume. What now? But I'm realizing now that a lot of the, you know, this is always obvious. It's just even more obvious now after having a re-swim through academia. A lot of the titles that you encounter are just all hat. And there are a few people kind of in charge, and it's not necessarily because of competency, because they won some old war a long time ago, and they're there, and their legacy inherits it from them. And if you happen to come in on your own merit or your own competency, or if you're novel or have a unique point of view that works, well, that's not the point to the people who have held on and bare-knuckled, you know, and they've had to defend their positions, and like... but it's so long been a defensive position that it's the baby has gone out with the bathwater, and there's no longer like sometimes you're in a situation where you're like, hey man, this is a bar. You know, did you just see what came and went out of that door? I mean, what are you talking about? Or hey man, this is a college. You know, you're my, you know, whatever, you're my advisor. You're not, you know, I don't want to hear about your moral scold about money. Like, I have difficulty. I do not settle well with the fundamental underpinnings of the economy. I'm not, you know what I mean? And that's what that fuels. And that's I've talked about that before, but like, why would some writer, you know, I get this implicit kind of interrogative. Why would you come back and get a math degree? Why'd you get a job? You know, like, what you know, and you're lazy writing, and now you're just lazy around hanging, taking differential equations classes. Like, yeah, because I don't want to go work for, you know, just, you know, I'll stick with being a student. And I'm not even like, you know, so, you know, and it's just for the sheer aspect of bettering my mind. But it doesn't translate to the vocational hatting, you know, that you encounter at a junior college, you know. Like, that confuses people, and you're, hey, man, you know, and they, so I guess what the point was I'm saying is I've always had, I mean, it, maybe it's a rare thing when people to step back from the rat race and make some sort of sacrifice instead of pursuing, you know, the like that sort of superficial wealth, you know, have a philosophical bent at some level of sacrifice, like, you know, and I didn't get it, you know, and that, I didn't get it into my career to get rich, and I'm certainly not. You know, it's more meaningful now because I, you know, I'm concerned about where the money's going to have to come from somebody in order to feed myself and the family, or keep the lights on, or not be dealing with abjection or hard scrabble when I've got these academic credentials and I've got this, you know, and it's like, but it's a real thing, and that job market really starts to matter. And, you know, because I could, well, I don't want to go back and work in restaurants again. I have been there and done that. It was 12 years of it, and that was very difficult. I was a lot younger and had a lot more energy then. And the people, I don't know if I could take it, you know. And it's, you know, so, but, and then there are people who, huge factions of people, and they hedge on that sort of thing from the womb, and you can't compete with that. They already are lodged in and governing the egresses to access to capital and the workforce. And I have, you know, have difficulty sometimes exercising, period, my right to work within the confines of my earned credentials from state universities, or my right to continue studying. Despite what some counselor believes to be, I mean, I can't at this point stop, go back 20 years and get it, you know, an MBA. That's not the track I took. People just have to deal with it for what it is. But anyway, another rant, forgive it. You know, and that was a step off from, as a writer, going into, there's a nuance and an anonymity to it. I feel like, you know, like it's a little, some of what I want and not some of what, some of what I don't want and not some of what I want when I go into these social commons, like at the schools and these bars. Like, you walk into a bar in a place you've never been, a state you've never been, and somebody knows your name, you know, and it's like, it's a little much. And it's the same thing at the campuses, because it's the same symptomatic of the same social commons, which is transcending. Hey, yada yada. I wrote up an Odelay Show monologue like, I don't know, 2 months ago or a month and a half ago that I decided not to put into production. It was a negative, unfortunately, assessment of the humanity. I was grouchy that day, I guess, maybe something like that. But I mean, I've changed a little bit lately, even more. I've continued to change. It didn't start out that way, and I didn't intend for it to come out that way, but it did now. My consideration was, you know, if I can't say anything nice, and I shouldn't maybe say anything at all. Like I said, it was a kind of a negative assessment of the general humanity. Well, I mean, that's not the first, obviously not the first critical thinker to say something like that. But, you know, like, you know, you got to deal with the world on a case-by-case basis. But that's the sort of attitude which is, I don't know. I mean, I guess, like, there was a time, well, I mean, you know, it can be said that, like, don't be afraid to say what you need to say. Well, am I self-editing? Like, I mean, there's all this, you're really into more scrupulous, and subtlety is not your forte, like, this and that. It's like, the understanding, this is what... I mean, fine, but it's protected. This is not, but it really, really is. When in that little world where money is everything, and your social status is all you have, and it's just absolute terror if it's even viewed askance. Like, yeah, then there's no speech, not in a real sense. And don't you understand? That's Fools. You know, and I would just say that sort of honest is such an attitude which has bought me more trouble than any other affectation. And I suppose that's an odd way to describe it. It's an affectation. It wasn't really that to me. People presume it because it is to many. So they think you're foolish. They think you're sandbagging, you know. And it's, oh, I'm only sandbagging in that sort of, in the sense that it's the only real defense I have. You know, that's just me. That's what my stripes look like. So I'll whip out my stripe and tail and whiff it all around. And people are like, oh, well, you know, other animals in the jungle are like, he's sandbagging. You know, so anyway, it suffices to say that if I'm, in order to use the term proletariat in a non-sarcastic way, I'll have to redefine it. The studies, as I had mentioned before, have interfered with my annual schedule as an author. Like last year was the first year. When I didn't publish at least one long-form project since I began writing long-form fiction and nonfiction, and otherwise publishing third-party long-form books since about 2013. And there's more to come. There's more in the hopper, but it's production process. The production process overall has been retarded remarkably, and I've said that before. I did another community theater project last summer, which only further espoused me to the further potential exploration of stagecraft and dramatic performance. Singing on stage and dancing along with acting would be great. I'm not a dancer. I mean, I'm fit. You know, I got the muscles and do yoga. But I think I've said this before. I warned you I'd say that a lot. This show. But anyway, there's certainly the... we shall see where that yen for stagecraft may lead. There's not really time to do it in earnest right now due to the economies of my being a penniless philosopher. It's also probably true by all rights that the best position to be in for such an operation is the driver's seat. And I know enough to know that is altogether no ordinary bother, production and direction. The guy I was working for the past two, did one in about two and a half years, or 2 and 3 years with this troupe, this local project. And he writes them and directs them, and he does a fine job. And he didn't give me like the depthful, lengthier parts. And I understand now and have learned there are... those are earned. Those comeuppances are earned. There is a lineage to that. You just don't walk in unless it's just highly serendipitous. And that doesn't happen. And there is no, you know, everything is the muses of the stage have an assessment of the sequence of events of the universe that probably outstretch one's own. That's their job, the muses. But I was used as, you know, I'm loud and clamorous and a shiny object and was, stop it. Cat's jumping on the idiot cat. You know, used as a, especially the second time around, I was put, you know, he used me exactly, you know, he used me as, I make good potpourri for this stage, you know what I mean? I put you over here. This last time I used me as a sax player, it was a spoof on 20th century film noir. Though the main characters and their long draft, you know, I'm a little intrepidated by all of that memorizing. My memory works in a kind of a certain way. It works like a writer's. Dealing with all the new math has added a new an order of measured change to, like, it's different. It's engaged me and changed, you know, that's part of what, like, I also found that memorizing these sets and these songs in the monologues with him or whatever for the open mics in the past year, that also, that starts to roll as well. So, but anyway, I've said this before. You know, as a, maybe everyone who steps on stage who has a relationship with theater is blown away by its evident necessity for, you know, in order to survive, the necessity of it. And it is also fair to say that maybe every writer who comes into theater after, you know, as a writer already having established themselves as a writer, may have the type of amazing revelations that I had. You know, when you walk into that and then it's somebody's, it's writing that's been put into the quick. There is a magic to that that can't be beat. And it's anyway, I've gone on about theater, but we should see how that pans. I mean, at this point. Anyway, that's an update. Just updating. I was, like I said, last summer I was involved in another community theater project. I've written about being involved, you know, late, you know, recent decade, getting involved in that sort of thing. But the guy who runs that, he writes it, produces it, directs it, and that is a bear. There's just a lot to manage. It's kind of full time, and it doesn't really pay, you know, like it doesn't. A lot of what happened, you know, people are retired. They did their early career right. They have their little pension or whatever, and then they can kind of spend the rest of their life doing what the hell, what they're supposed to, you know, what they kind of want. They don't have to be, unlike me, where I'm trying to figure out what I can do so that I don't have to eat cat food or, you know, jump off a bridge. Just, you know, because there is no, I mean, it's, the world is occupied. You know, and like I said, I've got to retool my, you know, you go back, you don't want to exclude additional, you know, shingles and academic venture, like go back, you take a bunch of, you know, a post back that gets incorporated into your skill set if you're mid-career, you know, you don't just, not in a vacuum. And, you know, I don't know. It's like, but I was just, I've become more of what the status quo doesn't care for. Maybe. I mean, I'm not necessarily, I mean, yeah, but in terms of day to day shocking the conscience of the HR personnel who are just terrified that, you know, and they're just online. And everything is, you know, and that's how they're controlled. I mean, that's how that they're that way. And someone who, you know, I mean, that's just too much risk. Can't have you. I don't even understand. Anyway, I think it's fair to say. A couple of things to report. Anyway, moving forward, like journalistically, I've talked about church and state. Which I've mentioned before, and conflations therewith, which, you know, after nearly two decades as a giorno, an American writer, I can say, like, you know, in the field, like, and I've said it before, one of the biggest problems, if you could just say it in one sentence, would be it's the mixture of church and state. Full stop. And that's something you've always heard about. Like growing up, you know, hey, you start learning about constitutional law, you're in high school or whatever, yeah. And that's a real thing, and it's true. And I tell you, that's, you gotta have, that's, and I've talked about it at length before. But I say that, that's something that's obvious that I've, was a long time, you know, officially putting a fork in. And, you know, that's kind of one of the major findings that one, that's a thesis proposal right there. Something for your graduate level journalism lab, communications, law. But also, I have a fresher one that I haven't mentioned, and maybe it's, you know, it's also one that obviously has been front led for a long time, and I've kind of, you come up against it, and I've heard talk of it and had colleagues deal with it and had to been in that and in environments and in the institution and been around it and was, you know, born of it and you know, worked with it and matriculated from it, but academia. Now here's the deal. And this, the stigmatization of speech that deviates from a company line or that I just talked about a few minutes ago, like at these seats of learning. And this is something like, okay, right, or what was it, the Third Reich, some of the last strongholds of egalitarian intellectual lodging to be dismantled were the high echelons in academia. All right. All right, let's say that. So I guess the point I'm saying is that there's a, it is now, academia gets fenced. This is why, you know, and obviously I've hammered on about free speech over the years on this show in general. But you have to approach these, this is why I am governed to, you know, have been governed from beyond the grave, if you will, throughout my whole professional career and current incarnation. When you deal with these issues and you come out and you say them, well, you better have 20 years of research behind you, because because these are heavy issues: church and state, freedom of press, you know, the right to assemble, and like, okay, and I'm mentioning the academies. That those are, you know, where you teach, and like, you know, I mentioned earlier, like, you, I'm here to learn. I really don't want to participate in the cocaine and hooker fueled economy of the world. So I'm just going to come over here and learn mathematics. I'm a polemicist, now I'm going to add math. And it's one thing when the advisors are like, woo, well, why don't you go get a job at the, you know, we can't work here, but why don't you go get a job? I don't know. Good luck. And that's one thing coming from the advising staff. And it's another thing when the administration, if due to, say, what your body of written work, your political bent, your lack of perceived political correctness, establishes a well silhouetted impotence bias. What is, like, I'm using like the word like an electrical engineering sense. I am not impotence. Impedence. Impedance. Ohms and the like. Resistors. Two. Accessing graduate work or, you know, graduate programs. You know, I have, how to round in. I don't have a lot of what I have said tonight has been written down. I've scripted it, wrote it down before I've said it. Some of it I've gone a page or two or three or four off script. This is off. So you'll find probably a lot more right now. And I've also been careful about how to put this. This is a serious issue. And I mentioned that I was accepted, like, in 2016, I've said this 1,000 times, to an MA program in overseas on the Iberian Peninsula, and I couldn't afford to go. There was no money. I'm not on it. I didn't take the track where scholarships were availing left and right, and I have this great GPA, because I don't have a bad GPA. It's like the last 60 is about a 2.81. The whole thing entirely is a 2.456 or something. No, 2.54. Or 2.56, one or the other. About 2.5 overall. And that's like, it's pushing 200 hours. Like, it's 180 if it's a minute. And I have to be very careful now that I have come up on the Associate of Science in Math, and there's no kind of, the next step is to go across the street and get the Bachelor of Science in Math, so I really will have two bachelor's degrees. But I have to time that very well. I have to not stutter step as such, because if I play the cards wrong, I will hit the limit of undergraduate financial aid which is like $57,000, and it's not, you know, I already had originally like 30. And it's, there's 10 more money for tuition. It's 10 times more for one class hour at University of Arizona than it is at Cochise College. And so I'm about done at Cochise College. I'm taking some requisites now. I've actually deviated from the AS degree track, and I'm not going to pick up the AS degree because I'm taking, which, because I'm taking a requisite to go across the street. Anyway, so the admission to the school in Spain, that would have been great. Like, there's only one graduate program down at the little extension down here, so it's kind of limited down here. I think, just intellectually, the best bet, and I said this at the outset, my original plan was the post back, and that's what I'm doing now. You know, that's the more rigorous intellectual and the more dutiful academic study. But I'll be an undergrad for another 2 more years. I just continued that. My first undergrad took 11 years. So I'm, you know, so so there's more of that. And I'm going to be, you know, poor moving forward. And probably won't have as much time as I would like to, you know, do community theater rehearsals in the evening, that sort of thing. But anyway, I am sad to report. And I think that, I mean, it just depends on your school. And this is why now every graduate applicant is going to know this. Every knowledgeable faculty member is going to know this. Every knowledgeable adjunct is going to know this. It matters where you go. Those are the politics that matter the most in your life, in your career as an academic. You can't just say, well, this is a university. Of course it's going to, there will be cooler heads prevailing. There will not be troubles with church and state. This will not be tightly held by a particular ecumenical politburo who would never fess up to being in, having a death grip on it. At the end of the day, it's a secular school, you know. No, that is incorrect. And you can wish it, and it's not supposed to be it, but it is. And it is. So that's what you call, kids, that is a failed state. I mean, it is. I mean, okay, petty as it is, and just, or just take it into consideration that it, you can wish it one way, but it ain't that way. So you figure out where you're going, and then go where birds of a feather flock together. You know? No biggie. Well, but the point is that it's an academic point that needs to be made. It's a point of order, all right? No harm, like, I'm just, all right, just saying. And it's true. You know, when you got a situation where you're authoritative in any number of ways, your background is what it is, you have a body of written work that is fine and unusually, anchored and substantially broad for even a, you know, tenured doctoral. I mean, in some cases it would be, could be minimal, but I mean, certainly for any graduate applicant who's mid-career, I mean, you take a hard look. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, real quarter you, dude, geez. Because where else are you going to go? Because there's nowhere else to go. You know, like, you're going to give it. But what ends up happening is that not only is there that kind of, oh no, you can't come in, there's this knowledge that, no, we are shutting the door on you, and you better see it for what it is. Slam! And that's embarrassing. And those are state-funded schools. Or they're they're state school. I mean, the money comes, I'm sure, from private here and there. We'll cloud the issue a little bit. But the point is, that money comes from here and there with all due caveats. This is not a private school. So, yeah. That in addition to the, I'll mark that down here, church and state problems, contemporary America. I've heard, who was the academic guy? Is it University of Colorado? American Indian guy, I forgot his name. I see his face. And I've seen some of his books. And I've just been a while. And, you know, strong constitutionalist bent and tenured over there, and they can't unscrew him, you know. But he needs, you know. But I mean, the politicization. What was I reading an article about this the other day? The politicization of America's campus. It's like everyone's like, yeah, obviously this has been this way for a long time. It's always been a problem. You watch this. I think it was some article about how, you know, what's become of the humanities in the college, and they're rushing into this technocracy and all of the government funding with respect to, you know, recruitment for the deep state and recruitment for the military and military-industrial complex and the technocracy and the incentivization of the technological. And I grant you, like, you got to remember, I, you know, grew up at the doorstep of a major regional, you know, agriculture mechanic, university, with robust programs, you know, in science and mathematics and engineering. And engineering schools, you know, from, and, but I have this tale that regardless of what the record may say, the civil record may say, what I am, there's a reason why I was thrown through polemics, you know, and a career through that first before I take a look back at the academy. And then there's a reason why now I am, bam, drawn directly back to the math and science and the engineering. Because that's where I was really supposed to have gone. That, you know, according to the main drag, that's where most of my peers went out of high school. They went that way. And, you know, and I suffer the blowback from it from you know, within my family or within my, you know, whatever, geographical strata. It's like, he's such a big, you know, no one will come out and say it because, you know, they're too Jim Taggart, but it's like, you know, you big layabout losing fag, you know. I mean, I feel like that, you know. Just go get a useful degree or something, you know. It's like, and now it's too late, and now you're doing it, you big chicken shit. But anyway, I don't know. But that's what happens when you, I don't know, when you make deals with the hegemons of the universe that are binding at a young age about wanting to possess the Philosopher's Stone. Not just wanting an engineering degree, not just wanting an MBA and the money, not just wanting a picture-perfect trophy wife and a nice pig life and a, you know, painless death, but wanting to know and knowing and living and experiencing it. And then you're not going to just, you know, it's the path less taken. So church and state and academia, and that's just one of those things in real policy that you got to realize. And here I am talking about it now. I think it's expected of me more or less by my peers in the more general sense, historical peers. I mean, to not note these things, but even to note these things is at the conservative end of things, it matters and it has effect on, well, how well you are to be trusted as a co-conspirator. But this is, on the other hand, we have a failed state with respect to the press. It wouldn't be so difficult for the working press in the United States if more people would do what they're supposed to do. Then there would be a lighter load for all to bear. But because there's so very few, it is just, let me tell you about who's really accountable. And it's a relative few. That's another thing. Church and state, academia, the destruction of the press, which has been decimated. And I believe I've talked about this, I've written about it recently, like I think on social media or something, which I don't attend very much. You know, there's a reason why the press has been dismantled. And maybe it needed an overhaul. Maybe there's more of me. I don't know. We pretty much have to fly in different airplanes. So conceivably there are, you know, optimistically. I don't know. There are people doing the best they can. But I think what's important in any, nevertheless, is to look at the forensically how those assaults on the press have come to be, okay? Regardless of whether it's been successful or not, regardless of whether the changes in the new media have, you know, how the nuances of that are different. But it, regardless of those successes, take a look at the black and white assaults, you know, on it. And then take into consideration, you know, like, okay, so we know that these body politics are going to, they're going to do everything in their possible, conceivably possible, to annihilate the American working press, whether by death, but killing, starving, extraordinary rendition, whatever, smoking out, whatever, threatening and following through on family members. That's what they're going to do to put shut down the American press. Now, regardless of whether they're successful or not, it's not the point. What I'm saying is that that's the sort of thing that happens, and people need to take a hard look at the parties doing that and what they're wearing, or what badge, good guy badge, their name they're wearing when they do it. Duly. So, let's see the press. Worth mentioning. Puts some people in some pretty tough spots. And that's why no one wants to do it, I guess. Let's see, what else? So those four items. I mean, I don't, you know. Hang on a second. Well, I guess I can knock it off. That's nearly an hour. That's about right for the Odelay show's running time. Wish me luck on paying my bills with a rapidly dwindling amount of leeway on my Chase Amazon credit card. And the veterinarian bills. Wish me luck on that. I'll be fine. It's just a little tight right now. And I know I'm being fleeced, but what am I supposed to do to these people holding their hands out, you know? I'll be at the C4 Comic-Con here at the Cochise College Sierra Vista campus this coming weekend. So people listening to this 500 years from now, just walk on back and buy a book. I don't have my, I'll be over there by the same place I was last year, over by the bathroom, which isn't a bad place in the student union, which isn't a bad place for a booth, because everybody has to kind of blow through there. That venue, it's like $25 for a vendor, and I don't have to pay because I'm enrolled over there. But compared to the three figures, however many, at whatever level that are required, for example, up in the big ones, like up in the Valley, Phoenix Comic Con, whatever. It's a breeze. And this has grown. The guy who sponsored it from the Digital Media Arts Consortia at the school, guy's name is Ron Hyde, Mr. Hyde. He said at the orientation a couple of weeks ago that last year, all said and done, there was some bellwether that had 1,000 hits at the end, after the last day and the door shut. He said there are already 2,000 as of 2 months ago or something. So people get on these circuits and they go, and as you know, there is a full gamut of talent, from complete new debutante, you know, first time somebody's ever cosplayed, to, you know, people who have really a thing going, and they travel around in their caravans. It is not the Texas Ren Fest, but that started out small too, theoretically. But these things grow, and they're pretty cool. So anyway, that's where I'm going to be this weekend. There's more to say. I'll try to save it for another show and try to record more frequently, especially now that I'm kind of back to the day-to-day. The Odelay Show, 23:43, nearly midnight on February, 2019, whatever year that translates to in China. Last time I checked, it was 113 over in Asia. Something like that. It's 114. I don't know what it is. Thanks for tuning in. I'm doing social media differently now. I don't know. That's such a no man's land, and I've been kidnapped. it's not, you know, I can laugh and it's kind of funny, and I don't know. I'm pretty. I don't know. I have to kind of deal with things like that. But so if you what is it? FusePowder.com / WordPress, and I could add you there. Try to just migrate on over to my own site instead of dealing with it. Just have a lily pad like that instead of dealing with a corporate backed multi-headed beast like the social media. And I already flushed all my social media a couple of years ago and brought some of it back just because I needed to know when open mic was, or you know, but boy, all the troubles, not all of it. And some of the stuff I dumped, like my Tumblr that I'd had for a number of years, and which was, which for writing of Hipster Bricks, when I wrote a typed page per day and then voiced it over and then processed it and edited it into a book, you could see how that book came into being. And that was probably one of the most, that was the standout, I guess, storyline that was going on my Tumblr. And I had flushed it because I was just like, I'm getting rid of all this shit, because you just don't know who's there. You just don't know. And you just can't know. And you can't know who you're talking to. There's just no way to know. And it's like there's absolute silence, and it's just, geez, it's just too dangerous. Now, there's no better really way to market things if you got something to market. But I mean, at what cost? My gosh. I mean, I just theoretically, like, I mean, well, or hypothetically or applicably, I mean, practically speaking, it's just kind of too dangerous. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, who are all these people that live on the streets? Like, I have no idea. You know, it's kind of like down the road, I tried to get the loan. This motorcycle was used Honda. It was a V1100 or 2007. Applied for the loan, didn't get it. Some woman down the road ends up with it in her yard. Just bought it. Now, how did she know? I have no idea. Never rides it, sits out there and gets rained on. It's been out there a year now. It's like, even if you can trust people, you can't trust the AI. What the hell? You know? Anyway, that's definitely a rant. And I am a terrible salesman. So, them's the breaks. And the Odelay Show, fusepowder.com/WordPress. And Odelay Show with CG Braswell. I'll be back. Thanks for listening. Get in touch. Like I said, I'll add you on that. If you get in touch, I don't know if I'm getting out on this anyway, but let me know you're listening, if you're listening, or if you want to get together or what. I don't know. This is how it works in this this new media. Show me the way. Well, good night, everybody.